Chapter 26, Berlin, a Blonde, and Checkpoint Charlie. I arrived in Paris from Athens, but pretty quickly decided that I'd head off to Dusseldorf to try to do some modeling there. Rumor had it amongst the models in Paris that Dusseldorf was a great market for modeling for catalogs, and at that time there was nothing going on for me in Paris, so I headed off to Dusseldorf by train, as my MO back then was that if I got it in my head to go somewhere, I went, plain and simple. What the hell, why not? It was that little old cheap thrill of a brand new environment that I was all about back then. So I arrived in Dusseldorf and got a room, and then I got a model agency to represent me and was immediately sent to several castings that happened to take place at these really unbelievable studios. And in fact, that's what I remember most about Dusseldorf, were those incredible studios. But unfortunately, I didn't happen to get booked for any jobs. So after about a week there, mainly hanging out at this one cafe, I was thinking, well, nothing happening here. So I decided to call Miss Berlin. Remember the airport in Athens? The beautiful Berliner blonde? The kiss? The if you're ever in Berlin? And so I retrieved that little piece of paper that she had written her number on and called her and told her that I just happened to be in Dusseldorf. And she said, would you like to come to Berlin? Hell yes, I thought. Hell yes, I'd like to come to Berlin and make love with a beautiful blonde spy in war-torn Berlin. Hell yes, I would. So I said, sure, I'd love to. I'll go get a train ticket and let you know the schedule. And so I headed for the train station, bought myself a ticket, gave Miss Berlin a call, letting her know when I would be arriving, boarded the train for West Berlin, and away I went. Little did I know what I was in for. You have to understand Germany in those days. The Berlin Wall was still up, and there was an East Germany and a West Germany, and East Germany was still under Soviet Union control, and if you wanted to go to West Berlin by train, you had to travel through East Germany to get there. Crazy, huh? That's just the way it was laid out after World War II. So there were two things that stand out about this train ride. First, I was sitting in the dining car as the train was rolling through East Germany on its way to West Berlin, and I see this middle-aged woman across from me weeping uncontrollably. Well, I mean, when you see something like that, it's shocking, and I was compelled to ask her if she was all right, if there was anything I can do. So I went over to her, and I asked, are you okay? Is there anything I can do? And she said, no, it's just that every time that I take this train ride to West Berlin and have to go through East Germany to get there, I can't help but cry because I still have family here in East Germany. My heart went out to her and I felt so sorry for this poor woman. War is hell, even if it's a cold one. The other thing that happened that stands out was that the train made a stop somewhere along the way while we were still traveling through East Germany, and the East German Army, or SS, or whatever they called themselves at that time, boarded the train in full uniform, weapons, the works, and walked slowly through the train cars and really scrutinized us. It was creepy, and it was nerve-wracking. It was an experience that I'll never forget, and one you can't get any longer. Here's some information and the map of Germany at the time, so you can get a better understanding of just what I'm talking about. I got this from Wikipedia. West Berlin was formerly controlled by the Western Allies and was entirely surrounded by the Soviet-controlled East Berlin and East Germany. West Berlin had great symbolic significance during the Cold War, as it was widely considered by Westerners as an island of freedom. It was heavily subsidized by West Germany as a showcase of the West. A wealthy city, West Berlin was noted for its distinctly cosmopolitan character and a center of education, research, and culture. With about 2 million inhabitants, West Berlin had the largest population of any city in Germany during the Cold War era. West Berlin was 100 miles east and north of the inner German border and only accessible by land from West Germany by narrow rail and highway corridors. It consisted of the American, British, and French occupation sectors established in 1945. The Berlin Wall, built in 1961, physically separated West Berlin from its East Berlin and East German surroundings until it fell in 1989. On October 3rd, 1990, the day Germany was officially reunified, East and West Berlin formally reunited as the city of Berlin. Here's a picture of Checkpoint Charlie, and then there's a picture there. What happened to me in Berlin during those 2 days and two nights that I was there, I could never have predicted in a million years. First of all, I had all these expectations. We always do, don't we? I was expecting to have the greatest love affair and sex ever. I would be making love in war-torn Berlin with a beautiful blonde Berliner spy. But nothing happened as expected, not even close. And that didn't matter, as something much better was in store for me on that trip. In AA, we say, God's will, not mine. And if you can really accept things the way they come down, even if it's not the sex or whatever thrill that you expected, then miracles can happen that are way better than anything you anticipated. But I believe it takes acceptance first. The most magical and ironic and amazing things happen by chance, not by plan. If I had lived my life according to my own plan, I never would have left Chicago. Of course, I've never really had a plan, come to think of it, but I guess my point is that when I just go with the flow and not have expectations and just take things as they come and simply go with it, then greater things end up happening, and that was certainly the case here. I think you'll see what I mean. So I arrive at the train station, and as soon as I got off the train, I see her. And she's standing there in front of her car, an old black mint-conditioned Citroen, wearing a fur coat and looking absolutely stunning. And the whole scene looked exactly like a spy movie. And she smiles at me and I smile at her, figuring we'll probably have sex in the car before we even get back to her place. And I walk up to her and we greet each other and I hop in the car. That was the last thing that happened according to my expectations. And the point I was trying to make before is that I was way better off for it, although I didn't think so at the time. Here's an image that I got off the net of the exact car that she was standing in front of when I got off that train that day in West Berlin back in 1985. So we take off, and I'm in this cool car with this beautiful blonde and driving around very cool West Berlin. I mean, I had to be in a spy movie, for Christ's sakes. I swear to God, it sure seemed like it anyway. She seemed to know exactly where she was going and says to me, "I'm taking you somewhere, Brad, to meet some friends." So we drive along, and I just can't take my eyes off of Berlin or off of Miss Berlin either. These foreign cities with their histories and atmospheres are so fascinating and new and satisfying, so exciting, so not boring, especially Berlin in 1985. Anyway, we arrive at this old brick warehouse-type building, I guess one of the buildings that survived the massive bombings that occurred at the end of World War II. We got out of the car and climb a few flights of stairs and go into a large room, sort of a loft-type thing. And there are four or five guys standing around and looking at these huge architectural blueprints that were laid out on the floor. And Miss Berlin says to me, "Brad, I'd like you to meet my boyfriend." So her boyfriend and I shake hands and greet each other, and I say hi to everyone. And then she explains to me that these guys are architects and are getting ready to go to an architect convention in Milan. So the whole visit lasted all of about 5 minutes, and then we said our goodbyes to boyfriend and architects, and away we go. So we go to her apartment, we sit on the couch, and I immediately attempt to jump her bones. I mean, I make a play for sex right off the bat. That's what I do. That's what I'm doing in Berlin. Well, she pushes me away and says, "Hey, I can't. I have a boyfriend. Basically, don't touch me." And boy, did that make me pout. I became a great big baby. What did I come all the way here for if we weren't going to have sex? God, are you kidding me? I came here for what? I didn't get my way. So I said, "Well, I'm just going to leave then." Because the big pouting baby Brad didn't get his candy. Little 8-year-old doesn't get his way, so he sulks and pouts and says he's leaving. So she, being the adult in the room, says to me, "You shouldn't leave, Brad. See Berlin first. And Brad, you should definitely go to East Berlin while you're here. Don't just leave. Go to East Berlin, Brad." I swear to you that she practically insisted on it. Had she not said that, I never would have gone to East Berlin, which was truly a once-in-a-lifetime experience. In fact, one of the most memorable days of my life. I've got goosebumps right now reading this, by the way. So the little baby cheered up a bit and said, "Okay, I'll take your advice." I guess I needed a little coddling, or better yet, some cuddling. But I wasn't going to get any of that. That was certain. But the point I was trying to make earlier is that this trip didn't go according to my plans, my expectations. And when you think about it, expectations are really so limited and for the most part useless, if you get my drift. And I'll tell you why. I knew nothing about Berlin or East Berlin or what might happen on this trip. My expectation that I would have great sex with a beautiful blonde in West Berlin, period. But obviously that wasn't at all in the cards. But what was in the cards was every bit as satisfying, albeit in a different sort of way. I could have in no way guessed what would have happened on this trip. It was destiny. It was God's will. It was life's magic if I only let it come in. Maybe I'm getting too heavy, but what I'm trying to say is that what happened to me and what I went through on this trip, I never could have planned. It was out of my range of knowledge. It was more spiritual than my greedy sex thoughts, and it was the sort of stuff that happened throughout this journey of mine because I let it, and I'm a true believer that attitude is everything. I think I figured this thing out. If you have expectations, you are limited to the things you know or that you've experienced or lived. What about things you've never experienced or know nothing about? And sometimes not having expectations allows the light to shine in or allows a higher power or some spiritual thing to take over. By not having a plan or expectations or your strong will, stuff can happen to you that is beyond your imagination. Well, my day in East Berlin was one of those times. And to think I was just going to do an adios because I didn't get laid. I almost hope nobody I know reads this book because then people will know what a great big spoiled brat I am. Well, anyway, here's what happened. To go into East Berlin in those days, prior to the wall coming down, one had to go through an immigration checkpoint since you were going to another country, so to speak. And this immigration point was nicknamed Checkpoint Charlie. So I did the Checkpoint Charlie thing, showed my passport, etc., and then was told that I had to be back by midnight. That seemed sort of strange to me, a bit like Cinderella, if you will, but that was how it worked. So I go through Checkpoint Charlie into East Berlin, and as soon as I get in, if I remember correctly, there was sort of a restaurant or coffee shop type of thing that I walked through, and I remember so well that this coffee shop looked so drab and run down and was so smoky from cigarettes, and I noticed that the difference between the two Berlins was night and day. So I just started walking, so to speak, and out of the place, and now I'm outside walking on a sidewalk in East Berlin, and after about 10 minutes, I come across a sort of bar, restaurant type of place, much nicer than that first place. So I go in and sit at the bar and order a coffee, and then another, and after drinking a few coffees, I go back outside, and when I got outside, there were two girls standing there talking to each other, and one of the girls had a baby carriage with a baby in it, go figure. I meet girls again. Whew. I can't tell you how many times during my journey a female had a direct relation as to where I ended up. So I approached these two girls, and they start talking to me in German until we realized that wasn't going to work. And then the one girl spoke a bit of very broken English, and the other girl spoke a little French, as did I. And so we were able to communicate, albeit barely, in very broken English, very broken French, lots of gesturing. And by the time we were done talking, if you will, if you want to call it that, the result that the girl with the baby in carriage and I would head off in one direction, and the other girl would go her way, and we would meet at a certain destination later that evening. I was just going with the flow and loving it. Who wouldn't? I had no idea what they had agreed upon in their conversation, but it didn't matter. This day was sort of like a dream or a movie. Not real at all, but it happened. You can rest assured. So there we were, the two of us, almost like husband and wife, pushing a baby carriage together, going God only knows where, when it starts snowing these fluffy, gentle snowflakes. And here are two people who met 5 minutes ago who don't speak a common language, one from Soviet East Germany and the other from the United States of America. And here we were walking and pushing a baby carriage together like we had known each other our entire lives. Again, attitude was everything. I was just going with what was presented to me and absolutely trusting and not worried or concerned about a thing. I was having fun. So we walk for about 15 minutes or so until we reach a bus stop, and then a bus stops to pick us up, and the girl in the blink of an eye picks the baby up with one arm, folds the baby carriage with the other. We hop on the bus and away we go. And only the girl and God knew where we were going. And as for me, I couldn't have cared less. I was having the time of my life on that snowy day in communist East Germany back in 1985. Finally, after a while, the bus stops, we jump off, baby carriage opens, baby gets put in, and we start walking again. After a short walk, we approach a very large apartment complex, which consisted of a bunch of buildings right next to each other, all exactly the same. And as we approach the building, the girl whispers in a very serious whisper in her very broken English, that the man over there is looking at us, and he is SS or whatever, and don't look at him. I'll never forget that picture. And believe me, my eyes went nowhere near his direction. So we get inside the building, go upstairs and into an apartment. And once inside, there were a bunch of people in the room, guys and girls, including the one that I had met earlier that day. And everyone in that room was smiling at me and welcoming me and so happy to see me. It was just very festive in that room behind that iron curtain on that snowy day, on that snowy winter day in 1985. Anyway, we all communicated the best we could. And I remember that one girl who I had met earlier and I having a conversation in French. And she told me that it was her dream to one day go to France because she had read all about it and had even started to learn the French language. But of course, at that time, East Germans weren't permitted to leave East Germany. So actually going to France wasn't a possibility, but you can always dream. They were literally prisoners with no end in sight. But that night, it didn't matter as we were all having such a great time together and enjoying each other's company as we ate and laughed and used the universal language of love and respect. Anyway, it was getting late and my midnight curfew was fast approaching, so I said my goodbyes to my new friends and headed off for the bus back to Checkpoint Charlie. And I remember arriving there at precisely midnight, right before I would turn into a pumpkin, I guess. And then through Checkpoint Charlie and back to Miss Berlin's place. And she was right when she said that I should go to East Berlin before leaving right away in that spoiled brat huff. So what fate had in store for me was what it was supposed to be, and I'm better for it. I think I learned a few things that day. One thing I learned is how extremely fortunate I was to be free. You know, I remember watching on the news that wall being torn down piece by piece, and those people with huge smiles on their faces as they chipped away at that wall. And I thought about my friends over there that I had met that day, who had treated me so wonderfully and with such class. And I thought how happy they must be right now. They were free now, and how very happy and excited I was for them, even though I'd never be able to tell them so. Excuse me. So the next day, I say thanks to my hostess, Miss Berlin, who by her simple suggestion made possible the wonderful couple of days that I experienced, and I headed off by train to London. Out of curiosity, I Googled this East and West Germany thing, since my knowledge of world history is so lousy, and came up with the following fascinating stuff from history.com. After World War II, defeated Germany was divided into Soviet, American, British, and French zones of occupation. The city of Berlin, though technically part of the Soviet zone, was also split, with the Soviets taking the eastern part of the city. After a massive Allied airlift in June 1948 foiled the Soviet attempt to blockade West Berlin, the eastern section was drawn even more tightly into the Soviet Union. Over the next 12 years, cut off from its western counterpart and basically reduced to a Soviet satellite, East Germany saw between 2.5 million and 3 million of its citizens head to West Germany in search of better opportunities. By 1961, some 1,000 East Germans, including many skilled laborers, professionals, and intellectuals, were leaving every day. In August, Walter Albright, the communist leader of East Germany, got the go-ahead from Soviet Prime Minister Nikita Khrushchev to begin the sealing off of all access between East and West Berlin. Soldiers began the work over the night of August 12 and 13, laying out more than 100 miles of barbed wire slightly inside the East Berlin border. The wire was soon replaced by a 6-foot-high, 96-mile-long wall of concrete blocks, complete with guard towers, machine gun posts, and searchlights. East German officers, known as the Wallposts, I guess, patrolled the Berlin Wall day and night. Many Berlin residents on that first morning found themselves suddenly cut off from friends or family members in the other half of the city. Led by their mayor, Willy Brandt, West Berliners demonstrated against the wall, as Brandt criticized Western democracies, particularly the United States, for failing to take a stand against it. President John F. Kennedy had earlier said publicly that the United States could only really help West Berliners and West Germans, and that any kind of action on behalf of the East Germans would only result in failure. The Berlin Wall was one of the most powerful and iconic symbols of the Cold War. In June 1963, Kennedy gave his famous Ich bin ein Berliner, I am a Berliner speech, in front of the wall, celebrating the city as a symbol of freedom and democracy and its resistance to tyranny and oppression. The height of the wall was raised to 10 feet in 1970 in an effort to stop escape attempts, which at that time came almost daily. From 1961 to 1989, a total of 5,000 East Germans escaped. Many more tried and failed. High-profile shootings of some would-be defectors only intensified the Western world's hatred of the wall. Finally, in the late 1980s, East Germany, fueled by the decline of the Soviet Union, began to implement a number of liberal reforms. On November 9, 1989, masses of East and West Germans alike gathered at the Berlin Wall and began to climb over and dismantle it. As this symbol of Cold War repression was destroyed, East and West Germany became one nation again, signing a formal treaty of unification on October 3, 1990. And that, my friends, is the end of the chapter. Excuse the mistakes.